We're talking with Rebecca Labina of the Northwest Missouri State University Small Business Development Center. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning, Barry.
Thank you for coming in.
Absolutely.
It's always good to catch up with you once a month or so and find out what's going on in the way of helping business succeed here in the St. Joseph area. And you've got some stuff today about various business structures.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? So there's different ways that people can structure their business. And this does not only have to do with people who are just starting out. I mean, obviously this will apply to them. But for those who are already in business, it might be a good time to consider whether or not you might need to restructure your business as well, because that happens too. So the structure is just the legal structure. So what type of legal entity is your business operating as? And it has all kinds of implications with taxes and liability and things like that when it comes to the way, well, even how your business operates every day. So the different legal structures are everything from a sole proprietorship to a partnership, and then LLC, which is a limited liability company, an S-corp and a C-corp. Those are the big ones. And so by default, if you don't file for any type of legal structure or business structure, you are by default a sole proprietorship. It's the one that doesn't require you to do anything at all.
In terms of license or
in terms of paperwork with the state or,
right.
or yeah
right.
or the feds, it's just it just is, you know, if you decide to open a business and get your business license out there and everything, then you can go ahead and do that, and you're just automatically a sole proprietorship, unless you elect otherwise.
Is there a bird in here?
There's a bird in here. Sorry about that. All right, got it quieted. Okay,
there you go. So, okay, of those various types, are there percentages on how many businesses are sole proprietorships, how many are partnerships, et cetera, et cetera?
Yes.
Probably are. But
there are, but I do not know. Barry can see my face like, yeah, probably, but I don't know that. Yeah, I don't know what that is. But I can tell you that as far as being a sole proprietorship, a lot of smaller businesses have elected to be – by not electing anything, they have therefore by default elected to be a sole proprietorship. And that is rarely, very rarely ever the recommendation is for someone to be a sole proprietorship. At the very least, they should file for an LLC, a limited liability company. And the reason for that is, so if you're out there on your sole proprietorship, listen up. The reason for that is that as far as the state is concerned, your business and yourself and all of your personal assets are all considered one and the same entity if you are a sole proprietorship. Whereas if you elect to be anything else other than a sole proprietorship, then your business and all of its assets and operations and goings on are all separate from your individual personal assets and things of that nature. And that's what you want. You want your personal stuff to be separate from your business stuff. You don't want your home or your car or your land or your farm or whatever it is that you have to be compromised in any way by a business, you know, by some weird business thing that might go on down the road. You want that to stay separated so that it's protected.
Okay, so just give an example of how that might work.
Sure. So say you have farmland and you have a house on that land and you decide that you're going to open up some type of a mechanic's garage or something on the land. So you build a building on the land that's already yours. You own the land. And so now that building is sitting on your personal land and you haven't elected any type of different business structure. So you're just a sole proprietorship working, you know, your job, people coming in and out, doing their thing. Something goes wrong, right, with the business. Somebody sues you because they say you tore their car up or you didn't fix it right or whatever the case is. because you are a sole proprietorship, that and you've placed, and in this situation, you also have placed the business on your land. But even if you hadn't have done that, even if the business was built somewhere else, or you leased a business something somewhere else, because you didn't elect to be something other than a sole proprietorship, when that person comes to sue you, everything is on the table. So, you know, you could lose your farmland, your home, all of that is now in play, and it doesn't have to be. A simple $50 filing for an LLC or some other type of legal entity with the state would help to protect that as your first step. And then people wonder, well, isn't that what I have insurance for? Yes, but insurance has caps, and there are insurance cannot possibly cover everything. And sometimes if things are done inside the home or on the land that you own as part of your business, sometimes you just think that your homeowner's insurance will cover it, and it won't.
Let me ask you a two-part question about LLCs. Does LLCs, first of all, stand for limited liability corporation?
Yes.
Okay. And the second thing then would be, is this the preferred, the recommended way to go for even the simplest business, to go to become an LLC, to have that protection that you're talking about?
It is definitely a simple way to go. Yes. And for almost any business out there, I would recommend that they do at least an LLC or an S corp, because of tax reasons and because of the liability that we just talked about, to protect to keep everything separate, their personal and their business separate. And it's so simple to do. It's so simple. For most people out there, they don't need to see an attorney to get it done. It's something they can do themselves. You can do it online. It's a one-time filing. Never have to file it again. No more paperwork involved. It's very, very straightforward.
And this is filed with the Missouri Secretary of State?
Yes, Missouri Secretary of State. And I even have step-by-step instructions on how to do the filing if you need that. And so, you know, there's other things that go with an LLC. And as a disclaimer, I am not an attorney. This is not legal advice that I am giving. It is just general business advice as far as, you know, understanding that there are different legal structures out there. And rarely is the sole proprietorship the way to go.
Can this also apply? Can an LLC also apply if you are creating a nonprofit structure and a nonprofit organization?
So a nonprofit typically is considered a corporation, and so it's a separate entity in and of itself. And so with the state of Missouri anyway, when you file as a nonprofit, it is a corporation that doesn't pay taxes.
Now, you also mentioned S Corp.
Yes.
What's the difference between an S Corp and an LLC? Or can you be both?
Right. So that's a very good question. And the answer is yes, there's differences. And yes, you actually can be both. And here's how. So an LLC is recognized in the state of Missouri and many other states, but it is not recognized at the federal level. So at the federal level, you have to decide how you will be taxed as either, let's say you're a single member, so one person owns the LLC. Then you can be taxed as a sole proprietor, or you can choose to be taxed as an S Corp. And so the S Corp is a subchapter S corporation. So what most people hear about regular corporations is the double taxation for them. That does not apply with an S Corp. The benefit to being taxed as an S Corp is if you plan to pay yourself, the owner, a salary. If you are paying yourself a salary as an S Corp, then you are allowed to deduct that salary as payroll, which makes sense, right? Because it's payroll.
It's a business expense.
It's a business expense. However, as an LLC, this would just be considered a draw on equity. So, and then therefore not a tax deduction. So, or not a business expense. So it makes more sense to be taxed at the S Corp level. It's a benefit to you to be taxed that way. And then as far as the LLC goes, it's just simple paperwork, the one-time paperwork. And then you're set.
Okay, we're wading in some deep waters
here. I know.
But you're doing a great job of sorting it out.
I'm trying to explain. Yeah, this is one of those topics that's very convoluted on the radio. But I'm doing my best. And usually I have a visual aid. You know, there's a chart. So there's differences in how you set up an LLC versus an S-Corp as well. An LLC, you can actually have people, you know, have multiple members who buy into it. It's not called stock. You're not selling stock. It's called just interest in it. So really it's just more of a language thing, like what you're calling it, versus an S Corp where you do have stock. You can issue up to 100 stock in the state of Missouri. And but again, people can buy into it by purchasing the stock. An S Corp is required to have a board run the company. So a lot of people don't like that part. Especially if they're a one or two person ownership, it's like, I want to run it myself. I don't want a board telling me what to do, right? And so I explain to people the board can be your mom and your wife or spouse and whoever you want on the board. There's no requirement there. But you are required to have a board. Whereas, again, an LLC does not have that requirement. But in an LLC, you would want to have what's called an operating agreement. So an operating agreement, even if it's just you, which sounds silly, it's like you're agreeing to do one thing for yourself. But really, the operating agreement explains all of the different things, who owns it, what happens if you were to pass unexpectedly, what happens if you want to sell it. All that is explained is written out in the operating agreement. For you and if you have other members of the LLC to know what goes on. And your bank will get a copy of that as well, because sometimes in there's written, like, if it's a check over a certain amount, you need two signatures or something along those lines. And so that's why the bank would want a copy of it.
So if anybody has any questions about the differences here and about how do you get going in one or the other or both, they can come to you. I'll call you, come to you perhaps even, and you'll walk them through it?
Absolutely, I will. And I'll give them the visual aid, which makes it a whole lot easier to sort through.
Well, you're doing a great job of painting a word picture. So
I'm trying.
More with Rebecca Labina just ahead. We've been talking about business structures. It's been really interesting. And I know, kind of complicated, but you're sorting it out for us, and we really appreciate it. One of the things we haven't talked about yet is we talked about sole proprietorships, LLCs, S-Corps.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked about partnerships.
That's right, partnerships.
Pretty common.
They are. They are still very common. And you know, for good reason. A lot of times businesses, the way that they're started or what have you, is because you have more than one person putting money in the pot, right, to get everything going. And because one person a lot of times doesn't have all of the cash needed to get going. Or later on, maybe you take on a partner, you know, you merge one company with another company. So now there's two, you know, main leaders, if you will, leading the business. And so the way that with partnerships, the important thing to note is that you have to have an operating agreement in place. So, or you can call it a partnership agreement. And essentially what that does is it spells out who has what percentage of ownership, and even more importantly, it needs to spell out what is expected of the partners. So, because what I see from time to time is you get a partnership that was verbally understood to be one way, but it's not working out to be that way. And so, you know, like one partner is basically gone all the time and they were expecting them to be working, you know, 40 hours a week, but they're not. So putting everything down in black and white and writing in a document helps to hold each partner accountable to what they agreed to, essentially. And of course, it would then be, you could legally, you know, go after the person if you wanted to. That's not the route anybody would want to take, though. It would just be understanding that this is what is expected and putting that in black and white in the operating agreement. Additionally, partnerships need to spell out who has final say. So if you have a couple of partners or even more than two, you know, if you have three or four owners, who has final say if any of the partners or someone else, a third party? So if you have two owners and they're each 50-50 ownership and they don't agree on something, then what happens?
Yeah. What do you do then? Flip a coin?
Right. Like, how do you decide this? So who's going to have final say? So sometimes the person with final say is written out as like the managing partner. So they will always have final say. Or the partner that has the most ownership has the final say. Or sometimes it doesn't go like that at all. Sometimes it is just, if we can't agree, then a third party, like a designated third party, an attorney or an accountant, whoever is designated as that third party who only has the business interest at heart and has no personal opinions about anything other than just this makes the most sense on paper, right? Sometimes that's the designated person. But those are the important things to remember with partnerships. And partnerships are really, really rough. They're really rough. I see it's hard to have, you know, too many people in charge. And so you just have to make sure that you've got it all spelled out and you're willing to let go at some point in the future. There probably should be an exit plan for most partnerships.
Do you think that it would be a good idea to take, if you're in a partnership, to consider changing it to something else? And what would that be?
So partnerships can easily be morphed into like an S corp. You have to form the board, of course, which we talked about how simple that might be. yes, it can. You can change your legal structure at any point in time. Now, in doing so, you know, of course, there's paperwork with the state and sometimes with the federal government, depends on what you're changing it to. And you'd want to talk with your CPA or accountant about it, because you want to make sure that you're not messing up your tax situation for that particular year. So there, you know, there could be good times to cut that off, like, okay, as of January 1 or whatever your new fiscal year will be, that would be a good time to start a new legal structure.
Under a partnership, just again back to that, how does that work for taxes? Is it fairly simple, or
it is? It's based upon, again, whatever legal structure or business structure you have. So if it's just a straight partnership, then whatever percentage is owned by each partner, then that income tax burden. So let's say they're 50-50. Let's just give an example. That's probably easiest. If you each own 50% of the business and you made $100,000 that year in profit, then one partner, because they own 50%, is going to take $50,000 over onto their personal tax return, and they are going to pay that tax burden for the $50,000. And then the other partner takes the other $50,000, puts it on their personal tax return. So the it's a pass-through entity in the sense that the business is not paying the tax burden, the individuals are.
Do you have to, at that point, go to a Schedule C?
Yes.
Each of them?
Each of them would have that. Actually, no, I take that back, Barry. There is an actual partnership form that is filled out for a partnership on your taxes.
All right. So it's just some other form designation.
Yes.
It has, but
yes.
It's for partnerships.
It is.
All right. So in the end, you said sometimes partnerships can be rough.
Yes, because, you know, 10 years later after the partnership is formed, a lot of times there's, you know, down the road, there are changes. Partners aren't getting along. Things aren't progressing like they hoped they would. Whatever the case may be, you know, one's burned out and wants to get out. And none of these are bad things. These are just normal life occurrences that typically happen over the course of time. And so a lot of times I see partners who are just very disgruntled with their other business partner. And they need to get out. And they usually have an operating agreement or partnership agreement in place. But sometimes it's not, it no longer suits what the need would be of the company. And so it's important to review those types of documents regularly, probably every couple of years, and make sure that whatever's written in them still applies. And you would want to have an attorney involved in that to make sure that everything is written properly.
Is it complicated to dissolve a partnership?
It's not complicated, no. I mean, there's a set steps that you take. You know, there's just three or four things that have to be done in addition to whatever's written into the operating agreement. But it's usually more about feelings than anything else. Mm. So
in the end, so much of life comes down to relationships, doesn't it?
It really does. Partnerships are, it's like a different type of marriage, you know, with your business partner. Mm-hmm.
So your recommendation, if somebody's happy in a partnership, continue on, but...
Yep. All I would do is double check that they have a partnership agreement in place and that it's been reviewed recently. That's it. Yep. Okay.
All right. Anything else we need to say about partnerships?
No, nothing I want to say.
Okay. We've got about 3 minutes left here.
All right.
You do have some leadership trainings that are coming up.
Yes, we do. So this coming Monday, actually, Monday the 27th, we have the Women's Leadership Group is meeting, and we have our speaker, Dr. Jennifer Jackson. She's a new professor at Missouri Western State University, and she's actually going to speak on respect, being respectful, where choice matters, and how to lead, you must earn respect. So that is the topic that she's going to talk on, and it's from 12 to 1 on Monday. There's no fee to attend. We are full internally right now. We have over 40 people signed up, but you can still register if you want to attend virtually. So we can still have people attend virtually. Obviously, this being respectful is a hot topic we must have landed on. So that's good. That's good. We like to see that. It's part of a three-part series of being a better leader. And so the one in January had to do with financial statements 101 for leaders. And then this one, of course, is being respectful. And the one in March, the fourth Monday in March, is leading high-impact teams, how to drive your employees to achieve goals. And that one, the fourth Monday in March, is March 27th. It's also at noon. That one will actually be at Stony Creek Inn. We're expecting a very large turnout for that one as well. So we have moved it from the Chamber of Commerce to Stony Creek Inn.
And in both cases, people do need to register.
They do, just so, again, we know how many people that we're going to have. They can bring their own lunch. Again, there's no fee to attend. It's just a matter of making sure we have enough, you know, that we put enough chairs out.
Yeah. Okay, and the first one you mentioned, and just to maybe take another 20 seconds on this.
Sure.
Respect. I mean, it sounds, it's a basic part of life, but sometimes we forget, don't we? We get busy.
We do get busy. We do get busy and forget that there are all kinds of things that go into being respectful, from consideration and politeness to just knowing when to not speak and knowing how to speak when you do.
That is wise.
I am wise today. I like it.
You could be a writer of the Proverbs. Rebecca, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Barry. Always a pleasure.